B-Pod Studios.
This is WWE Superstar Roman Reigns, and you are listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley, two great members of the Kowloon crew. Mike, remember, this is Jay Stu's yard, brother.
Mike Riley, hell of a week in WWE and pro wrestling. First, I want to start with the Pat McAfee situation. Let's start with Pat McAfee. He was the voice that you heard alongside Michael Cole on Friday night. I thought overall he did a really nice job, a really good job on Friday Night SmackDown. It was announced Friday morning that McAfee would make his debut as a member of the SmackDown commentary team. He called the show along with Michael Cole, and he will be going forward. Corey Graves moved from SmackDown to Raw, with Samoa Joe being cut. More on that in a few minutes. Tom Phillips being replaced on Raw by a super annoying announcer. Mm-hmm. Adnan Verk.
Yes.
If that name sounds familiar, which obviously it doesn't to me because I can't pronounce it, it might because he works with Michael Lombardi on his football podcast. He also has worked with ESPN, TSN, MLB Network, and DAZN. He bugged the crap out of me, and the reason he got the job was because he's friends with the new WWE president, Nick Khan. I don't think there's any relation to Tony Khan, but you do that on your own time. So that's why. This is to a bigger point that I want to actually lead off with is the WWE has an announcer problem. Vic Joseph, I think, hurts NXT. Tom Phillips did not help Raw. Adnan Verk. Adnan Verk.
Yeah.
Has a resume for the spot, but watching Raw, he annoyed me. Meanwhile, by the way, the best announcer out of the bunch, Mauro Ranallo, he's going to be calling Impact's Rebellion pay-per-view main event, which is Impact World Champion Rich Swann against AEW Champion Kenny Omega, title for title, next week, a week from Sunday, April 25th. So Mauro Ranallo, who's the best voice out of the bunch, due respect to Michael Cole, which means I really kind of don't respect you. Although Cole, when he's not being overproduced, is fine. It kind of bugged me. And so the announcer thing, and I'll bring this all back to Pat McAfee in a second. Working in the media, I've got 20 years, you've got 15-ish.
Yeah.
The number one salesperson for your product is your on-air broadcasters. So maybe this new guy on Raw will turn into a great announcer for the product 6 months, a year from now, something like that. But his first impression bugged me. But I will say this. When I first heard Joey Styles do Extreme Championship Wrestling, he bugged me. But then after about a month, I got Joey Styles and learned to love the voice of ECW, Joey Styles. And Joey Styles historically does not get enough love for being a top five pro wrestling broadcaster for the last 25, 30 years. So set that up way too long. But Mike Riley, what do you think about this whole announcer shuffle and specifically first thoughts on Pat McAfee?
Well, Pat McAfee, I thought, was really good on SmackDown. He seemed to have a real natural sort of flow on the commentary there, and I liked his delivery. It almost had something similar to like a Jesse the Body Ventura, a presence, if you will, and someone who I just really think that you really, whenever he speaks, you listen to him, and that's really good to do that on a television network for Fox, where they're paying so much money to the WWE, on SmackDown, which essentially now is your number one show, to be thrown into the fire right there or in that situation. It's really good. He's got the media background with him. We know that. He's got the NFL behind him too. He's good in the ring. So he's versatile and he's really good on commentary. So Pat McAfee, I thought for his first show, was really good. Can I just touch on Adnan Verk real quick for 1 second?
Sure. Please?
I'm with you. I thought he was very difficult to listen to. I had a hard time adapting to that there. And I am not a Tom Phillips guy. Never was. And I'm with you. I think that the WWE commentators, I think you hit the nail on the head. When Michael Cole is not overproduced, they're kind of like a vegetable lasagna. Okay. They do nothing for me. They're boring. And they're more or less not fans. I mean, unfortunately, we've been spoiled with Jim Ross We've been spoiled. Even with Vince McMahon, he was a good play-by-play guy for that matter. Eric Bischoff, Tony Schiavone, those guys are fans. These guys are just placeholders to tell you, almost like journalists and so forth. It doesn't fit a natural thing there. Adnan Verk also even said on Boomer Esiason's morning show, he has still not met with Vince McMahon yet. So he may not even meet with them. We'll see if he has a job after this week. But he's got a long way to go to pick up the pace there on Monday Night Raw. Not a fan at all. So he's got a long way to go.
So specifically to Pat McAfee, I like the idea of Pat McAfee. He has the gift of gab. He's a fan. He's been in the ring. He did commentary for SmackDown once before, which I went back and watched it. Remember when the WWE roster was being held hostage in Saudi Arabia following Crown Jewel in 2019? McAfee was part of the commentary team for the November 1st, 2019 episode of SmackDown. It was with Tom Phillips and Renee Young. He popped on their like second, third segment. They had Aiden English do the first segment or two. I watched and listened to his work during the Ciampa Miz match and the Daniel Bryan Adam Cole title fight. Just spot on. Didn't feel out of place at the time. I felt the same way watching SmackDown on Friday night with Michael Cole. Knowledgeable information, was there to put over the talent. Had enough background. What he was really good, I felt, with his information, his energy, his personality. I think his voice is going to grind on people a little bit initially, and then you'll get used to it. But he's mainstream enough. He's got enough in-ring work. He's got a strong product knowledge. So he checks a lot of boxes for him. So I think this is the guy long-term. He signed a multi-year deal with WWE to work with them back in 2019. I assume that they have expanded the parameters of that, because I can't think that they usually run, WWE usually runs 3 or 5 year deals. So in 2019, if he had signed a 3 year deal, that would have been coming up. I assume that they extended that out. So I assume he'll be on this, he'll be under contract for another 3 years.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So 2020, so 4 more years of Pat McAfee, maybe not necessarily in this spot, but he'll be under their control for a while. Interesting, though, that they can now play off an announcer angle if they so choose. Mm-hmm. I know that there was a lot of anticipation saying, oh, well, Pat McAfee and Adam Cole, they got to come together as a package because they already did that program. The NXT audience has seen that. Maybe they bring that to SmackDown. I know that as of Friday morning, Adam Cole had not been told of any plans for a movement from NXT to SmackDown or Raw.
Mm-hmm.
So Pat McAfee is your new SmackDown announcer. I think that's an important deal. And let's see what happens with Adnan Vernak, Adam Vick, Michael Vick. Now I'm just messing around. So everybody who's screaming, I'm just messing around.
Todd Phillips, Adnan Verk.
Adnan Verk, yeah. Yep. I don't want to.
We'll leave it at that, yeah.
He didn't sing to me. He didn't do it for me.
And that's a big
so
show.
So let's see what happens. And so this will be the interesting thing is how long does Vince ride him out?
Right, and that's
because remember he loved Mike Adamly. Remember Mike Adamly?
Right.
And then he had to move him around different spots.
That was a disaster. And again, he still has not met with Vince McMahon, so that could be some writing on the wall right there. But that's a big show after the immediate one after WrestleMania. People watching, and he did not deliver. So he's got a long way to go.
Him saying that is interesting because we all know Vince likes to scream in the announcer's ears.
Right.
So who's screaming in his ear now? Is it Bruce?
I was about to say Bruce or Triple H.
Is it Bruce? Is it Hunter? Because I know Hunter runs 205 Live. Mm-hmm. And Hunter obviously runs NXT.
Yeah.
Because I've always been told that once Raw and SmackDown go off the air, Vince and Bruce pick up their stuff and they're headed for the plane.
They're out. Yeah.
So
on to the next city. Or
who
wherever.
Knows. Yeah. Speaking of people who are on to their next city, their next territory.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Thursday, April 15th, 1 year to the date of the massive releases from 2020, WWE released a statement. WWE has come to terms on the release of Samoa Joe, Billy Kay, Peyton Royce, Mickey James, Chelsea Green, Tucker from Harvard, Kalisto, Mojo Rawley, Bo Dallas, Wesley Blake. As of today, April 15, 2021, we wish them the best in all of their future endeavors.
Yeah.
So, Mike, where do you want to begin? Pick a worker, any worker.
I think it's obvious you got to start with Samoa Joe. That's the big one on here. And there's so much to dissect with this guy. I know how much a fan you are of Samoa Joe and have been a big cheerleader for him for years. I like Samoa Joe, too. I think he's great. But this was the big one. This is the headline right there. And sure, he did his duty of being a commentator for a while when he wanted to get back into the ring. And he still did the company line there. And even as of last week, was commentating on WrestleMania. And that final moment of him in WWE, I'll remember
Samoa Joe in a poncho will be exactly the lasting moment. That will be the last time we saw Samoa Joe.
Right, at WrestleMania. So,
what a rib.
Oh my gosh, crazy. So here he is right here. Samoa Joe, phenomenal size. Never had that run in WWE and really just underappreciated and underutilized. The obvious answer here is for him to go to AEW. That's the obvious answer, right? But there's so much other competition out there where he could go back to Ring of Honor. He could go to Impact, who does have that relationship with AEW. He could go to Japan for that matter. But Samoa Joe, we do know he's 42 years old, and yes, he did express his intention of returning to in-ring competition instead of announcing. And, you know, just a couple other things on that, too, with the announcers in the past, the two that come to mind for me, for WWE, for talent that were behind the commentary desk and then wanted to get back into the ring was the Macho Man Randy Savage. He was 34 when he left the WWE and then went on to WCW. Mr. Perfect also was a commentator as well from 1992 to 1996 sporadically. But then he left the company and went on to the WCW. So similar trade here when those guys want to get back in the ring. Perfect did come back to WWE in 2002. But again, I think Samoa Joe still has a lot left in the tank. And this is that was the biggest name on the list. Wouldn't you think so?
Yeah, Samoa Joe was absolutely the biggest name on the list, and I was surprised very much that Joe was on WrestleMania and then got cut. That was very surprising to me, because usually that kind of, like, Tom Phillips wasn't on WrestleMania, and I think that that might have had more to do with, in the same way that Joey Styles didn't call WrestleMania, they brought JR back to call WrestleMania, is this is WWE's first WrestleMania on the Peacock Network. So who's your best announcer? Well, Michael Cole's going to do 8 hours of commentary, and because he's your best lead announcer. He's the one who can tell the stories the way Vince McMahon wants him to tell the stories. And they didn't believe in Tom Phillips to do that. So as far as Samoa Joe goes, I poked around a little bit. And the feeling I got from people I texted with was Joe couldn't adapt to having an agent and working within the WWE Raw SmackDown system. So 205 Live and NXT, the performers call a lot of their own stuff. And that on top of, and Joe couldn't adapt to that. This is what I was told. I don't necessarily believe this, but this is what I was told. So Joe also has that, plus Joe has an injury history and he has his own business. He has like an e-commerce business, and maybe more people know about this than, because I found out about this when I was poking around. So Joe doesn't really need wrestling. So when he goes out there and he gets into a confrontation with Brock Lesnar, Joe can let it fly because he goes to his own business and he's good. When he does a program with AJ Styles, he can just let it fly and do whatever he wants. When there's an instance where Joe's on camera and they're doing something with somebody who he's had a rivalry with, Joe can make all the facial expressions he want because Joe's still thinking about his next match. And maybe stuff like that didn't fly well within those in power in WWE. Plus, he doesn't have that look. He doesn't have the look that they're looking for, even though when you look at it on paper, Brock Lesnar versus Samoa Joe looked right. Bobby Lashley versus Samoa Joe looks right based on size and toughness. And, you know, you saw when Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar had their program leading into Great Balls of Fire that Joe looked like a legitimate challenger and got under Heyman and Lesnar's skin.
And that was a good match, too.
It was. It could have been a little bit longer. They could have told a little bit more. But the point is like maybe Joe went into business for himself.
Yeah.
Maybe Joe went a little off camera or off script. Because here's what people have to understand is Bruce Pritchard on his podcast has told the story about how Triple H went off script against The Rock. And The Rock tried to stay on script. And Bruce Pritchard said to The Rock, look, we're live. You can do what we're live. Just understand that it better be better and come across better because otherwise you're going to get an ass chewing, right? So if you can go out there, somebody goes off script, you go off script, understand you're getting your ass chewed out for going off of what we told you to do. But if it's better, you won't hear about it. So that was when it was mom and pop, Vince and Linda McMahon running the company. Mm-hmm. Now we're publicly traded. We have $1 billion from Fox. We have $1 billion from USA Network. We have $1 billion from Peacock. One person goes off script. Somebody in a power position doesn't like it. $3 billion goes down the drain. So you can't take that chance.
Yeah.
And this is all just from those little pieces of information, which I don't necessarily know to be true, but I'm just telling you that this is at least a theory that's out there in the WWE offices, the universe of WWE, right? So that could be a reason why Samoa Joe is gone.
Interesting.
Again, a theory. I don't necessarily believe it totally, but it's a theory that's out there.
Interesting.
But you know, he'll have a job real quick. Ring of Honor, I know, is probably already reached out to him.
Oh yeah.
As has AEW. Like if Joe is medically cleared, Joe will have a job wherever he wants. And also, if Joe wants to have a job, he'll have a job wherever he wants.
Yep. And you know, and obviously, like I said, AEW is the big time one there. That would be a huge signing for them right there. An easy feud could be against Jon Moxley or maybe an Eddie Kingston potentially.
Kenny Omega.
There you go. Another great one.
Lance Archer. Size-wise, if we're just going for size.
Yeah, those guys are great. You know, but there was CM Punk. We were talking about this before the show, you and I, on his Twitter about a possible revival with his former rival. And CM Punk saying, quote, anything is possible. So we know about the matches. I'm with you, too. Jimmy's giving me the, nope, ain't going to happen.
CM Punk is the great Russell Tease of all time.
Of course. I think he's done for life. But there is that 1% chance of him potentially coming back here. But, you know, you look at the matches they had, the time limit draw at Ring of Honor. You know, he beat Punk to retain the Ring of Honor world title. Some good ones.
The series of three matches is what put Ring of Honor on the map.
Yep.
Is the two time limit draws and then the no time limit match that ended in like 30 minutes to the surprise of everybody. But though that series of matches, because nobody, think about this, Mike, nobody had done the 1 hour time limit draw on enough of a scale where it got noticed and enough of a scale where it was good.
That's true. Because that Ironman match. Yeah, the Bret Shawn one. Yeah, I think it's one of the most overrated matches of all time. You know, WrestleMania 12. Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, but, you know, it's just, it's like wasted talent almost here. Been with the company since 2015, NXT champion twice, United States champion, had a good little run with AJ Styles. I thought he was going to win one of those matches with AJ Styles a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought they were going to put the title on for a little bit. But, Mike, you bring up the NXT thing.
Yeah.
And we are this week. What anniversary is this week, Mike Riley?
Oh, yes. 5 years in Lowell, Massachusetts, where Samoa Joe beat Finn Balor to win the NXT Championship.
So you were there. You were row two on the aisle with Andy Wong.
Yep.
So when you saw that match and when you saw the upset, what went through your mind?
I was like, whoa, nobody was expecting that. However, the immediate thought was, okay, Finn Balor right to the main roster, Raw or SmackDown. That was the immediate, but it was just a shock. Everyone was stunned. And it's a good match, too. It's a really good match, but just a shock.
So I remember being told that the thought in the building was Finn Balor had an injury where he took a spot wrong. It was an ankle injury. It was a back injury. It was a neck injury, something like that. And so they switched the title on the fly. I remember that being some sort of theory about it. When the actuality was, they just wanted to do a title switch in Lowell because Samoa Joe won the TNA title in Lowell in a different building, which I was at. That was the main event with Kurt Angle, which was a UFC-style cage match, which I thought was excellent. It was a different style. I think it's the only TNA DVD I own is because I wanted that match.
Nice. That's cool.
So, like, little detail like that. But Samoa Joe, that's a great story, is Lowell, Massachusetts, a house show.
Yeah.
And they do a title switch there.
Right.
And you would have thought with Joe's history of success and believability and promos, he's got the complete package that Ring of Honor, TNA, NXT, they all put their world championships on him that, I don't know, WWE would do the same. But they didn't. They chose not to. So that's probably the biggest one. I think the second biggest one, and this is only because of the reporting that's come out of it, is Billy Kay. And Billy Kay and Peyton Royce, the Iconics, they got released. But Fightful had a report that Kevin Dunn, who is the lead director, producer of WWE TV, he's one of the very few people who is actually on the jet with Vince McMahon along with Bruce Pritchard. I think Michael Hayes is on that jet too. There are a few others. The report is But the report from Fightful is that Kevin Dunn didn't understand Billy Kay, didn't get Billy Kay. So I'll trust the reporting because it outraged the internet wrestling community, right? Which it kind of does. Yep. So Billy Kay and Peyton Royce as the Iconics were a great act. I don't think WWE trusted their in-ring work. So when the time came to split them up, well, let's see what they can do as a single. And then they never really got used as singles. I thought Billy Kay was doing great stuff, passing out a resume, just doing, like, that's the thing with both Billy Kay and Peyton Royce is when they were put on TV, they did the best that they could with it. And you kind of believe that Billy Kay was passing around to a resume being like, oh, be partners with me or, you know, work with me or let me, you know, all that stuff.
Sure.
So do I think it was a mistake to split them up? Yeah, I do. But they tried when they got on TV to make the best of what they could. When the Iconics won the tag team titles at WrestleMania in Brooklyn, the crowd went nuts for it. And it was such a big moment that Sasha Banks threw a fit in her hotel room afterwards, allegedly. That's how big a moment it was, is she was upset about it. But New York responded. The WrestleMania crowd responded. And by the way,
did you call it Brooklyn, by the way? Did you call it WrestleMania in Brooklyn?
I did call it Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's
Freudian slip. It was actually New Jersey.
Right. No, I know. I was like, wait a second. NXT show?
Because NXT was in Brooklyn.
Right. Okay, I got you.
Said New York, even though I had the poster that says New York.
I got you. Yeah.
They called it New York, even though it's like general New York area.
Right, yeah. The metropolitan, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. So when the Iconics were tag team champions, they were supposed to be programmed with the Bella Twins, and they were going to be in a featured program at SummerSlam in 2019. That didn't happen. But once the Bella Twins angle was out, they dropped the titles to Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss. And that was pretty much it for the Iconics, which is disappointing because for WWE, which is perceived, and I agree with this, as a promo company, you took two people who are really good at promos and you just got rid of them. And that's a shame.
Yep. And you know, to have that moment there where they never really parlayed that, I think it's further that they could, because you're taking the titles off Sasha Banks and Bayley. Those are two of the biggest female superstars in WWE at a WrestleMania. And that was the inaugural year of the Women's Tag Team Championships right there, which still really people are like, okay, whatever. And again, there's no real major significant. I mean, listen, it's a nice honor to have the titles, but it's not at the same level as a Raw or SmackDown Women's Championship. Let's just call a spade. It's true. They had the chance to really take off with that there. And, you know, to your article with the Fightful there, I read up on that as well. And, you know, also Billy Kay was pretty well respected backstage too. But she had a nice statement, took the high road on her statement there. Again, you know, we're talking about Samoa Joe going to AEW. I could totally see Billy Kay making the jump to AEW to really inject a little more life to the women's division in AEW right there. It's an easy situation. And what is it, the 60-day non-compete now, or
it's
90?
It's 90 for WWE, Raw, SmackDown. It's 30 for NXT.
Okay. So we're looking at like July, I guess, at this point.
Yeah, July 15th-ish.
Yeah.
But so here's the thing. Here's what I'll go to, right? So the internet hates Kevin Dunn, right? Because Kevin Dunn made a management decision, right?
Hates him.
He didn't get it. Didn't get her, right? So we blame Kevin Dunn, even though at the end of the day, it's Vince McMahon, it's Triple H. They're the ones who are really, it's Mark Carano. Those are the people who are making, or in this case, you know, we'll get to this in a second, but Chelsea Green was told by John Laurinaitis that she was getting cut for budgetary reasons. So is it John Laurinaitis making the call now? But at the end of the day, it's Vince McMahon's company, and he's the one that little V scribble is the one that signs off on these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this is my thing, is we're vilifying Kevin Dunn, who, yes, he's on the plane with Vince. Yes, he has a lot of input because he saved the videotapes from 1985 from a fire, some dumb stuff like that. But the thing that, so we blame him for Vince not, you know, just suggesting it, right? So, like, Mike Riley, if I tell you I don't like Rhea Ripley, like, she doesn't sing to me as a wrestling character, is it my fault if WWE does it something like that? Like, you know, you love Rhea Ripley, and that's your right to love Rhea Ripley.
Yeah.
I like the Iconics, but I don't love the Iconics, right? I think they're a good act, but they have a certain ceiling. And Rhea Ripley, I just for a second on Rhea Ripley, I felt like her moment at WrestleMania didn't match up with her moment in beating Shayna Baszler for the NXT Women's Championship, you know, 16 months ago, 18 months ago, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. I felt like Rhea Ripley's War Games Survivor Series weekend and then winning the title from Shayna Baszler was bigger than her moment in beating Asuka. And I feel like, reading up on some of the commentary, that I am vastly in the minority on this. Meltzer gave that match with Asuka and Rhea Ripley 3.5 stars.
Oh my gosh. See, talked about this last week. That was not a good match. No. But
the commentary is that Rhea Ripley and Asuka had a really good match. Didn't sing to me. So the point of me saying this is Rhea Ripley's ceiling, whether I like her or don't like her, or she sings to me as a character, or she doesn't sing to me as a character. Mm-hmm. Is high, is very high.
Sure.
I don't, and Vince and Bruce and Triple H, they all feel that way, or at least enough people in the room feel that way. I think that Kevin Dunn, Vince McMahon, whoever it is that we're talking about, feel like the iconic ceiling was X. Mm-hmm. And them winning the tag team titles at that WrestleMania in Brooklyn, New York, New Jersey, was their ceiling, their absolute ceiling. And especially when they didn't get the match with the Bella Twins, I think that was the point in time where they're like, okay, we're done here. We need to see if these two people can do it. And they decided that they weren't better than a commie act. So that's how I would push back to you, is that our bosses, we all have bosses. We all answer to somebody. And they have their vision for us as an employee. And whether it's, you know, we're big announcer voice guy who can just read scripts, or we're, you know, button pushing producer, or whatever it is, that's what our bosses, the people who sign our checks, see us as. And so we can either choose to accept that, or we cannot accept that and find something else to do for work. In this case, Vince McMahon and the company made the choice for them. So now they'll go off and they'll either go their separate ways or they'll do something together. And we'll see if they're main eventers or not.
Right.
Because they believe that they are, I assume.
Yep.
So we'll see. So let's see.
And just I stand corrected too. And Billie Kay would be great in AEW, but I think Peyton Royce would be the obvious one because her husband, of course, Sean Spears, right?
Oh, don't put somebody as talented as her with somebody as untalented as Sean Spears. Please.
Well, you know, I'm just saying that connection right there and make the call. Cody could just make the call any day and bring them both in for that matter. If they're going to try to, you know, amp up a women's tag team division in AEW or just want to have them go singles right there. You're right. But what they said with Vince McMahon having that ceiling life here with the Iconics and just I don't know. They were good. I'm with you. Like, I like them, but they didn't really go to that next level for me. Like, oh, my God, this is the greatest tag team of all time. Nothing that really grabbed me to remember something.
I think essentially, Mike, they had their moment. And
right, Mania 35,
whoever was making the decision was like, okay, they've had their moment. We can't do anything else with them as a team now.
And not for nothing, but like I said, that's a huge moment right there. Sasha Banks and Bayley beat them at WrestleMania right there. And if they can't
see them. The Iconics beat Sasha and Bayley, you mean?
Yeah, that's some. Oh, why are you doing?
Yeah. Pronouns, pal. Specific pronouns, pal.
Yes. And I think if WWE could not see them to ride that momentum, then you're right. It just didn't, they could not get to that next level where they wanted to take the tag team division and they just weren't there. So tried to go singles, didn't work in their vision, but they both still have a lot of shelf life left. It'll be interesting to see where they end up.
So the other release that I want to make note of, because there was a specific detail in it, was Chelsea Green. Chelsea Green is somebody who has been hyped up for a long time, and she confirmed in an interview with Fightful that she was offered a contract renewal prior to her wrist injury, which was around November, December, and re-signed with the company for 3 years. She also said that it was John Laurinaitis who called her with the news that she was released, citing budget cuts. So budget cuts, Mike Riley, right? Here's why budget cuts is relevant. April 22nd is the investment call with the stockholders and WWE. So they need to make sure that their books are in order for the investment call. So,
and that's what happened last year.
They needed to cut. So last year was a massacre, right? This was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 wrestlers, right? Mm-hmm. So that's rough math, downside guarantees, 100,000 per, we'll just say 100,000 per on downsides. So you can do the math from there. So that's...
Yeah, about a million.
So that's why I bring up the Chelsea Green detail. Mickie James, talented. She'll probably go to the National Wrestling Alliance with her husband, Nick Aldis, or right. She'll do whatever she wants because she's talented. She's good. And worst case scenario, she's got country music.
Yep. She's very talented.
Kalisto's talented. Kalisto's biggest moment, Mike Riley? What was Kalisto's biggest moment in WWE?
Cruiserweight champion, right? Would you say?
It could be, but that wasn't the answer I was looking for. The answer I was looking for was...
Which one?
TLC in Boston.
Oh!
When it was the three-way match with Lucha House Party. No, they weren't called Lucha House Party at the time. But Kalisto hit the flip off the ladder. Oh, why can't I think of the name? Elliot's going to yell at me for this.
Well, the match was...
It was New Day.
Yep. Lucha Dragons.
That's exactly what it was.
And the Usos.
It was Usos, New Day, and the Lucha Dragons. Ultimo Dragon House Party. What am I doing here?
Yeah, I forgot about that match. That
was it was one of the best matches. And I was ringside with Karabas for this.
Yeah, you were.
But it was one of the better matches that I've seen live that I don't talk about enough.
Mm-hmm.
One of the better ladder matches that gets forgotten in time, especially the tag team ladder matches. But Kalisto hit his finishing move over the top of the ladder and onto another ladder. It's a great spectacle. It's a great moment.
Mm-hmm.
Just just a fabulous moment. That
see, I wasn't thinking about that one, but sure, that's a great athleticism right there. What a talent! I mean, again, a lot
oh,
of
I can't believe I screwed up that match. Oh, I screwed up the details.
It's all good. At least you got
there. Goes my perfect game for the podcast.
Well, you know what? You can't get pitch them all perfect, but you know what?
And sometimes you feel like you have to.
NXT Tag Team Champion, right? He was there too. Yep. And you know, he was in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal last week on SmackDown. So yeah, that was another one. And then you talked about Chelsea Green. Talk about Tucker. Pretty open.
Tucker
about
tweeted, "My story will be told soon."
Talk about burning a bridge in WWE. But his tag team partner,
who cares? It's Tucker.
Well, I'm just saying, I think he's a little bitter about his tag team partner, Otis, who really has gone on to stardom, if you will. You know,
well, the thing is, the writer had an idea for Otis and Mandy Rose and not for Tucker.
Exactly.
So whose fault is that? That's
true.
That's the writer, and that is Vince McMahon for approving it. And by the way, the Mandy Rose Otis story was some of the best pandemic programming that they had.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Dolph Ziggler comes in the back door on Mandy Rose, and then Otis is late to the dinner, and then Sonya Deville, Mandy's best friend, is like, "I don't like Otis, so I want you with Dolph." And like that, that's very simple, basic storytelling. Otis wins and Money in the Bank.
Money in the Bank, yeah, that was an awesome pay-per-view. Yep.
Mandy Rose's biggest win at SummerSlam is over Sonya Deville in a loser leaves town match, and then Mandy gets put in a tag team for no reason.
The stock on Otis at this time last year was pretty high.
It was pretty high because he was a tremendous character.
Yep, very good character, you know. And there he is at WrestleMania last year holding Mandy Rose right in his arms, too, after that match. So that's another moment right there. But Tucker, though, the story to be told, that's, I don't know about that.
It's Tucker. It's another bitter one. So
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Right.
Speaking of stories to be told, Mike Riley, we're a week removed from WrestleMania 37. We've all had a week to digest and get some thoughtful intellectual intercourse on the event. Last week, we were live on 98.5, and we gave our instant and emotional reactions. I heard you on your solo podcast on Monday. You called the main event of night two with Roman Reigns retaining the Universal Championship by pinning both Edge and Daniel Bryan as the greatest WrestleMania main event since Daniel Bryan won the world championship at WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans. Did I get that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
And I stand by that comment.
So I didn't
Let's make it clear. In the ring.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
because you could go to the Boneyard match with Undertaker AJ Styles. I was not in the ring.
No problem.
Okay.
We're clear.
Okay, good.
I didn't get as detailed a reason as to why I felt like you felt this way. So, in short, I will sum this up, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Okay.
All right. Crowd fatigue was the case for WrestleMania 35 in New York, WrestleMania New Orleans 34 in New Orleans, WrestleMania 32 in Dallas. Correct?
Yeah. Yes, for the crowd fatigue, yes. Yeah,
crowd
exactly.
fatigue was the issue at 35, 34, and 32.
Correct.
Meltzer gave those matches 3 stars, by the way.
Okay.
The star rating is relevant. I'll get to the star rating.
Fair.
So WrestleMania 36, pandemic, we give that one a pass. That's a get me through WrestleMania, right?
That's a freebie, yep.
WrestleMania 33 in Orlando was just a bad match with Roman Reigns and the healthy of the Undertaker. So that's off too. That checks that one off.
Yep.
In the case of WrestleMania 31,
okay.
Wouldn't allow for the Seth Rollins cash in to be counted. Even though I will tell you that is arguably the greatest finish in WrestleMania history.
So
if it's not, it's top two or three. Yeah. But your point is that it was two separate matches.
Yes.
It wasn't a full triple threat.
Exactly.
So you disqualify that from your opinion.
Because on the card, it says Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns. That's why I disqualify that one. However, that moment is awesome. But I'm not disagreeing with that moment. But that match, though, he was not in the match. No.
All right. So that match, Meltzer gave that match, he rated it as a triple threat as 4.5 stars.
Okay, fair.
Right? The WrestleMania 30 win of Bryan over Batista and Randy Orton, one of my favorite WrestleMania main events of all times. For our purposes, Meltzer gave that 4.5 stars.
Yep.
For a rating. So that is, in the last 7 years, that is your number one main event match, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay.
What did he give Roman Reigns, Edge, and Daniel Bryan?
We're getting there. We're getting there.
Okay.
We're getting there. Don't worry. I spent a lot of time on this.
It's fantastic. Right?
So I know I'm presenting
I like when I get your brain thinking here, Jimmy. It's good.
Yep, because I wanted to dump all over it when I heard it. Right?
Go ahead.
So Meltzer gave night one of WrestleMania 37, Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks, 4 stars, which I agree with.
Yeah,
I actually think that was a really good match. I think that's worth 4 stars.
Yep.
So personally, my opinion, I like the women's main event in New York, and I liked both Roman and Brock's matches. But that is all a long way of saying and stating your opinion better than you stated it. I agree with you.
Thank you.
I think you're right.
Thank you.
The detail in real time last week, I needed more, and I needed to filter through it, because when I heard the statement, I'm like, no, that's not right. So I watched all these matches. I took notes on them.
Yep.
And I came to the same conclusion. You're right. That was the best match since the Bryan title win in New Orleans.
So,
and by the way, Meltzer's star rating, Dave Meltzer, WrestleMania 37, night two main event, Edge retaining over Daniel Bryan and Edge. Daniel Bryan and Edge.
Roman Reigns.
Try it again. Wow, I'm not having a good night.
It's all good.
So WrestleMania 37, Roman Reigns retaining over Daniel Bryan and Edge, 4.5 stars. So Meltzer's rating matches that match's rating.
And didn't you feel like you were on the edge of your seat the whole time there? Daniel Bryan. Yeah. And we talked about that. You know, there was all discussed there, everything, the way Daniel Bryan came out and Edge and Daniel Bryan had their one-on-one moment for a little bit, pulling the referee out at one point, the interference with Jey Uso, just so much. It was awesome.
Mike, the detail in that match, in the main event of night two of WrestleMania 37 of the concerto finishes.
Yep.
So Roman Reigns is using Edge's own finish to beat Edge, right? Edge used one of his finishes on Daniel Bryan. And here's the thing is on SmackDown, and I didn't think of this at the time Sunday night when we were live in instant reaction. Roman Reigns on SmackDown was like, yep, I'm going to stack them up and pin them both.
Edge, DB, I'm not going to do that for you, no. On Sunday night at WrestleMania, in the main event, I'm going to wreck everybody and I'm going to leave. I'm going to smash you. I'm going to stack you. I'm going to pin you. And the referee's going to count 1, 2, 3. And then I'm going to stand up. I'm going to take this Universal Championship. I'm going to hold it over my head. And you're going to look up. And you're going to see a man greater than you. You're going to see a man on a different level than you. Light years ahead of you. Then you're going to hear $1 million of pyro go off, and then you're going to feel the whole world acknowledge me.
And it
did. That's part of the depth of that match is Edge has a case that if Daniel Bryan wasn't in that match, he could beat Roman Reigns, whether it's Bryan pulling the referee out, preventing Roman Reigns from tapping out. The placement of Bryan for all of these moments to cost Edge the World Championship, the Universal Championship, are all over this match. And the fact that Jey Uso had to help Roman at every turn plays into the character of Roman Reigns.
And
match had so much great detail.
Yep.
It was such a phenomenal main event. And, you know, I put in all that work. So, you know,
good job.
Me agreeing with you.
That's
the reason why we're doing it, because otherwise there's no debate point, and I wouldn't have normally done that, but I did a lot of research and work into this, so
it's on the show,
and that's 10 minutes of your life that I have now wasted.
Good man, Jimmy. No, but I think it's the best main event since WrestleMania 30, like we both agree with here. And I will say this, too, that, and you know what? Roman Reigns, I fell for it personally, and I know you predicted Roman Reigns would win and retain. But I fell for it that Edge would be the new Universal Champion. 10 years to the day, the whole nine yards there. But the WWE has made it very clear that they are protecting Roman Reigns as the head of the table. And they're not going to take this title off him for a long time. It may not be for next year's WrestleMania. They are protecting him. Drew McIntyre, you know, look at that on the opposite side there for the WWE Championship, maybe a little more vulnerable, I guess you could say, to lose the championship instead of a Roman Reigns. But the fact that Roman Reigns pinned two Hall of Famers, two, in the match right there to retain the Universal Championship.
And he called a shot, Mike.
Yeah, it's amazing, you know?
This is the thing about Roman, and you know, it looks like Cesaro's next for Roman, which Cesaro's not going to beat Roman Reigns.
He's probably going to have to get through Seth Rollins first.
But here's the interesting thing about Roman, right? And people are going to give me crap for this analogy, but work with me here. And I can take it, right? Because I believe what I believe, and I'm a heel, and it's all good.
You own it.
This Roman Reigns run has felt like Ric Flair in the territory days of the 1980s. Here comes the champion who's going to work with different opponents and different styles, and he's going to make them look great. But in the end, Roman Reigns still leaves as the champion. But in the case of Jey Uso, and I will only speak for myself, did I think Jey Uso would win? I thought it was possible because it was something that nobody would call. But Jey Uso went from tag team main eventer to singles match main eventer. Because Jey Uso is regularly main eventing SmackDown now.
Right.
And he's in important matches. And he's running in interference. Like, you could have made a case that WrestleMania main event was really a four-way match. Right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because of how involved Jey Uso was.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jey Uso being a main event player is now thanks to Roman Reigns. It also set up this great Tribal Chief story, which adds to the character depth of Roman Reigns. It's not just about the championship. It's about something personal. And that's where wrestling gets really good, where it's exactly personal issues. Kevin Owens is a main event talent anyway, but he hadn't been in a main event in a long time. So here he comes with a pay-per-view match, a SmackDown match, another pay-per-view match. So you're getting another run with Kevin Owens in a main event spot. And I thought that there was going to be a case where they were going to switch the title real quick. Yep. And even to the point where in the Royal Rumble last man standing match, here comes the second referee and he has to stop counting because it's not the finish, right?
Right, right.
So, I mean, that's about as good a false finish as to getting the title as you'll ever see, right?
Of course.
But now Kevin Owens has more value to the mainstream fan than he did before. So Daniel Bryan always has the chance for the upset. And Daniel Bryan got an actual visual fall on Roman Reigns by tapping him out, even though the referee didn't see it.
Exactly.
So now you're led to believe that Daniel Bryan can now win the Universal Championship if he gets the right opportunity at Roman Reigns. And then you have Edge, the Royal Rumble winner, the Hall of Famer. His happy ending story is reclaiming a championship, in this case, a variation of a world championship in the Universal Championship, that he never lost 10 years to the day where he was medically disqualified.
Mm-hmm.
So the point here is Ric Flair had the world championship for 9 years out of the 10 years of the 80s. And Roman Reigns might have the Universal Championship for 500 plus days, 600, whatever the run is.
Oh, yeah.
But his storylines are strong enough, and he does enough as a villain to make you think, to make me think, that there's this possibility that he's going to lose the title. And that, to me, has so many similarities to what Ric Flair did in the 1980s. But one or two situations go the other way, and Roman Reigns is now no longer the Tribal Chief. He is no longer the Universal Champion.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is what makes Roman Reigns the best character on television right now, the best pro wrestling character on television, is because there are these points of weakness, but at the end of the day, he's still the champion and he's still calling his shots and you still care. And that is just, that's the great depth of a character right there.
So invested. That's a great way to put it there. And you know what? obviously being in the Thunderdome too, how they've had that capability of controlling the boos and so forth, right? And to actually see Roman Reigns get that natural heat at WrestleMania after so many months in a Thunderdome, essentially a television studio, where they control how the crowd audience is going to react, to get that natural reaction was awesome. And he owned it too. It was just fantastic. And WWE, though, again, they are so invested in the Roman Reigns character, like you said, probably the best character in pro wrestling right now. And it's going to be like this for a long time. And I'm very interested to see how this is going to pan out here, because you go down the roster, he's going to beat Cesaro. We know that. He beat Edge and Daniel Bryan. He's taking care of Kevin Owens, Jey Uso. Listen, no pun intended. Who's next?
So he'll beat Goldberg at some point, right?
Yep.
Because that's a match that's been there. So they're building Roman like Brock Lesnar.
Exactly.
Except the difference is Brock was only working 10 to 5 to 10 minute matches. Roman's going 20 minutes every pay-per-view, mm-hmm, at the very least, and he's on every show. But Roman's character is all about fear, respect, and win at all cost. And that is such a great character, and he's got the aura and the presentation to pull it off. Yep. So I do want to talk about characters. We got a few more things that I want to filter through here.
Please.
So I found myself a little confused by the Fiend, Randy Orton, Alexa Bliss match. And there was actually a rumor going around that it was actually Bo Dallas and not Bray Wyatt,
yeah,
dressed up.
Right.
I don't believe that rumor to be true. And based on the fact that Bo Dallas got released, it doesn't look like it's true.
But he also did like a stand-in or something to test it, right?
Yeah. Something like that. I don't believe that rumor to be true, but it's a rumor that's been out there.
Yeah.
So what I found, and it's on a Twitter thread.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to Bray Wyatt's Twitter, there's a photo of, there's an oil painting, and I don't totally.
Oh, right.
Samson, D'Elia. Yeah,
cutting the hair.
Yep, cutting the hair.
Yeah.
So on that thread is a very detailed, in-depth, logical, like where this Bray Wyatt story is going. Samson was betrayed by his lover, who was sent here and ordered to cut the hair. And here's the problem. It's a wonderful story. It's too deep.
Mm.
So there's probably 5% of the fan base who gets it. But the casual fan is like, oh, well, I like the Fiend. I like the Fiend. I like the character. I like the horror movie aspect of it. Like, why does he keep losing? Why does this happen? Why isn't he the champion?
Yeah.
Like, I'm buying his merchandise. Why isn't the promotion supporting me by having him win matches? So the hardcore fan, the 5-10%, I'll even say 10%, get the story, get where it's going. But there's the 90% who are like, I don't get it. Why did he lose to Randy Orton?
Yeah, they're checking out.
No, Mike, it's not a matter of checking out of the story. It's a matter of them not understanding it.
Okay, fair.
And I think, and this goes back to what we let off with the announcing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You need your announcers to be able to make the comparison that Bray Wyatt makes on Twitter, and that the 5-10% understand the story.
Yeah.
You need to make that parallel analogy of where this story is going.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are details in Alexa Bliss's outfit from WrestleMania that tell you part of the story, right? There are details, but people have to look for them because they're not being told them. Instead, it's, well, what does this mean? And then you get Bray Wyatt the next night on Raw, like kind of explaining it. And then you've got Alexa Bliss introducing a new character, but you're not getting slapped in the face with it. Like you are, Roman Reigns is the tribal chief. Roman Reigns is the universal champion. Daniel Bryan has the yes movement, so please chant yes. Edge is coming back, and Edge needs the title, and it means all this stuff. With Bray Wyatt, they're trying, Bray and Alexa are trying to tell you the story. Mm-hmm. But the announcers, I feel like, are failing with the Samson analogy that is on Twitter.
Yep.
The Twitter people have figured out this story when the announcers haven't been able to portray the story. At least I haven't been able to understand how they are portraying the story. So they're having, you know, Randy Orton, like, goes back however many, you know, to WrestleMania in Orlando and before that. So, like, they have this long and deep story, but because the announcers are not telling me the specifics of the story, me, the casual fan, I'm a universal me.
Yeah.
But I've lost pieces in this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I'll just say, me, the casual viewer, I've got no clue what's going on.
Well,
I just see my favorite wrestler losing.
Right.
And I don't understand why.
Exactly. And that's why I'm not, if they're not telling me why, what is going on here, I'm not as invested in the storyline as I should be. And you know what, Jimmy? You have to speak pro wrestling to people that understand pro wrestling. And that's not what they're doing here. I can't comprehend that either. And again, like, watching that match there, night two, to open WrestleMania, to kick off the show. You know, I had the Fiend winning, and obviously after being burned by Randy Orton, and then of course we get the betrayal like we talk about there. It just didn't. It was a tough start.
And
to
also,
the show.
Mike, we're so used to betrayals being there's some sort of like pull the leg, mm-hmm. Slap in the face. This is just goop coming out, right? So we're thinking of Papa Shango, right?
Right.
So, but the casual fan doesn't grasp that,
right?
And with the fact that people aren't necessarily like Raw's viewership, you know, 2 million people are watching Raw, right? So there are 33 million people who could have watched WrestleMania,
right?
And so you need to really tell in depth what's going on here, because people are going to be like, "Well, okay, I'll tune back in because I don't get it."
Tell us. Right. Tell us what's going on and just be, I mean, I know you get the gift of a picture to try to figure it out that way, but tell us what exactly is going on here. Who's who, what it's about and everything, because otherwise I'm lost. I'm lost in the shuffle. I don't understand this at all. And it just by seeing that and not able to, like I said, comprehend it there, it makes me have a bitter feeling about the Fiend / Bray Wyatt for that matter, that I think he could do better elsewhere. Because it just seems like his character keeps getting buried consistently. And it's a good rebirth he had for the Fiend. And it started at that Hell in the Cell right there with Seth Rollins and the disqualification. And just kind of, and then Goldberg losing in 10 seconds. And it's like, geez, he had a real chance to revamp it again to have that high profile. It's almost like a clown show now at this point. No pun intended with his, you know, the Firefly Funhouse. So it's just a real chance to take off with it. And they failed. They didn't do it.
But I would say that you should go to at WWE Bray Wyatt on Twitter, find the photo, and read through the thread, and you'll be able to understand the story that Bray Wyatt and Alexa Bliss are trying to tell you.
Okay.
That's what I would say.
Sounds good.
I want to squeeze in a few quick notes here. So AEW did 1.21 million viewers with no NXT and Mike Tyson on the show, and the demo god Chris Jericho for the fifth quarter had 1.35 million viewers watching his match against one of FTR with Mike Tyson, emphasis on Mike Tyson. But the show through the whole show was over a million viewers. So NXT on Tuesday did 800,000 viewers. So my question to you, because this also ties into, I know you have some thoughts on the Austin Jericho podcast.
Yep.
Mike Riley, do you think more people watched All Elite Wrestling this week because Chris Jericho was on the Austin Broken Skull show on Peacock after WrestleMania?
I'm going to say no. And I think I think because of Wednesday night, they have Wednesday nights themselves now, right? And not taking anything away from that Peacock network, you know, interview, which I thought was really good. But I think that with the fact that they're the only guys on Wednesday nights, more people are going to be invested into that one show instead of splitting back and forth between AEW and NXT. What do you think?
I think people forgot that NXT moved to Tuesday.
Yeah. Okay.
That's so, what I think Mike Tyson being on it, I think that they had all of, I think AEW had all these elements working together.
Yep.
They had the Jericho promotion on Peacock after WrestleMania. So people are like, oh, what's AEW? Right? Like JR talks about this on his podcast where he's going through the airport and somebody recognizes him and goes, oh, what are you doing? And JR's like, oh, I'm on Wednesday nights on TNT, 8 o'clock. And, you know, JR's like shocked that you're a fan of mine, but you don't know where I'm at. Right.
Right. Right.
So people are still trying to discover AEW. So I think that Jericho promoting it on Austin's podcast or Austin's Broken Skull show is piece one. Mike Tyson is piece two. And I think AEW had the night to themselves. So if you're a hardcore NXT viewer and you're looking for NXT and you might have forgotten that they were on Tuesday night, or you watch them on delay, or, you know, because they're on the network the next day, they're on Peacock the next day usually.
Yep.
You might have given AEW your full attention. And I think I think all three of those kind of played a role in it.
Well, okay. So, and then also they've been 18 months head to head NXT. So the first one sold right there. And I think WWE, you know, obviously they have put up the surrender flag. They did put up the surrender flag to move NXT to Tuesday night. But AEW, though, you talk about 1.2 million people watching. That was second highest. That was more than the NBA. More than MTV, and it was just shy of Tucker Carlson on Fox News and Rachel Maddow on, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, MSNBC. I'm not a political guy, so I don't know.
The news channels.
Yep. The news channels, you know, so I mean, and people are watching the news now for obvious reasons.
Not as many as around November, but we'll stop there.
Well, that's true. But
Fox News really on election night had 8 million viewers. They haven't touched that number since.
Wow. That's incredible. Imagine being a salesperson for that night.
Tremendous.
Retire tomorrow. So good for AEW, though.
But the news channels aren't doing as well as they used to.
Right, right. Election season's over. But however, we're in a pandemic, though. People are watching, right? But good for AEW. They're going to pick up and run with this. I'm curious to see how it's going to be. This one.
Mike, I want to see what their numbers are when they don't have Shaq and when they don't have Mike Tyson.
Exactly. If they do a million
viewers next week with no Mike Tyson, no Shaq, and just them, okay, let's see what we got here.
Here's the thing, too. For any wrestling fan, did you feel like, I mean, listen, don't get me wrong, it's a beautiful thing to have so much wrestling, but we had two nights of NXT TakeOver going into WrestleMania weekend, obviously Raw and SmackDown too, then two nights of Mania. By the time Monday Night Raw came around last week, I'm like, oh, I'm exhausted. And then NXT on Tuesday is like, wow, this is like 7 days straight. Then AEW, there was so much to condense in that period of time there. Again,
Impact Wrestling Impact is on Thursdays now.
Yeah, it's crazy.
AEW has YouTube shows Monday and Tuesday now.
Right. It's a lot.
AEW's got Omega on their YouTube show tomorrow. So
it's just,
you know, because Tony Khan and Kenny Omega are having a YouTube feud.
Boy. Yeah. It was a lot last week. A lot.
Yeah. So I know, Mike, you have some thoughts. Jericho did the Austin, I call it the Austin podcast, but it's the Austin Broken Skull Sessions.
Yep.
And then actually Austin did Jericho's podcast to talk about Austin's key matches, which I listened to, but you have some thoughts on, Chris Jericho's appearance on Austin's Broken Skull.
You know, it was announced 2 weeks ago, and you, me, and Joe Murray talked about it on our WrestleMania preview that they were going to be on there. We didn't really have a chance to discuss it last week after the debut of during WrestleMania. But you know what? I thought the interview was safe and informative for Chris Jericho. You know, he didn't knock Vince McMahon, obviously. I thought it was interesting, though, how Stone Cold Steve Austin did say that Vince McMahon gave him the green light to go ahead and just an emoji like, wow, okay, and just talk about how they got there and so forth. But you know what? It didn't go too much in depth for Jericho to knock anybody. He took the high road, and he's a company man for AEW. And I think I saw a lot of respect between the two of them right there. Jericho looked really mature. And again, he looked like a real company man, not a real bitter attitude toward anything. Now, listen, he also could have, they replayed the match with losing the title to Triple H 20 years ago, ironically, this week. He very easily could have knocked that decision, and he did not. But, you know, some focuses I saw were the Shawn Michaels feud at WrestleMania 19, very good match. The sell job there, and then the title win over Rock and Austin at Vengeance. They both made look each other good. But if I were Tony Khan, you know, Chris Jericho's current boss right now, he knows he's got 1 year left for Chris Jericho's contract here. Jericho made Tony Khan look really good. He didn't do anything bad here about to knock anyone in his former employer for WWE. But he made him look really good for one, to promote AEW and to show that he is that kind of guy where he's not going to rip any of the talent, or even for that matter, say, hey, look at these guys. They've done so much better in AEW than they have WWE. He took the high road and he did a great job. Those two work so well together. Definitely recommend people seeing the interview on Peacock Network.
So I think that Jericho's presentation of everything was very important, because he was critical of Vince McMahon and Triple H in different spots. It's just how he presented it. And that's the important thing. So when he says, when he's talking about the WrestleMania Orlando match, and it's him and Kevin Owens, and it ends up being for the US title,
mm-hmm.
instead of Jericho says he understood the decision, even though he disagreed with it. But then Jericho goes, oh, well, I'm the second match on the show. We all know what that means. And so it was from that point on that Jericho's like, I know what I am here. Let's see what else I can do. And that is a fair, as an employee, I think that is a fair critique, is that you disagree with what your boss thinks of you. So you're going to go and try and do something else. And I think they went into enough detail. But this is the bigger point in all of this, is Vince McMahon and Tony Khan let this happen because they're being adults about it.
Exactly.
And Chris Jericho talking to Steve Austin is important for the business of wrestling, which is vastly down as far as we can tell from 20 years ago. So if this is a case where you can get more people back involved in watching wrestling and they go, oh, I remember Chris Jericho. Oh, he's doing that. Well, maybe somebody watching Chris Jericho on Wednesday night is like, well, maybe I'll tune back into WWE and see what they're doing. And mm-hmm. then they discover Roman Reigns, or they discover whatever character they want to discover. But that's kind of the biggest point of that, is the potential Peacock is 33 million viewers, I think.
Yeah.
So maybe one of them is the lapsed wrestling fan, the bitter wrestling fan, and is like, oh, what happened to Chris Jericho? Oh, that's what happened to Chris Jericho? And now maybe they're back, or they're puttering around through the WWE archive of Chris Jericho footage. So that's a win. Right, is because WWE has you locked on their content in some way.
Of course. Yeah. And also, you know, when I say that too, with Jericho's contract coming up next year,
Jericho's not going back to WWE, Mike.
So I'm with you. But the question is, though, that you got to ask, how important would it be if Jericho did leave AEW?
I don't think it would be as big as it maybe was. I still think the first person to go from AEW to WWE is going to be Britt Baker. I don't know anything on that. It's just,
yeah, that's a good, yeah.
It seems to make sense because Cole's got a long-term contract in NXT.
Did you mean to say Cody Rhodes? I thought you were going to say Cody. I'm kidding.
No.
I'm joking.
So here's,
here, go ahead. I set you up.
Cody will go back to WWE if he gets his Royal Rumble win and the main event of WrestleMania goes over.
Oh yeah. I agree.
I feel pretty strongly in that's a strong personal opinion,
and if the money's that, right,
might be informed.
Okay,
all right. Because that would be just to stick it up Vince's middle,
yeah,
shoot.
Of course, yeah. So, but check out I like the interview. It was good.
But I don't think that Jericho would go back to WWE just because Vince wrote him the biggest check.
Right.
How Jericho talks on his podcast and on the Austin platform is, I have creative say, I'm making good money, I'm part of the process, and I'm also a leader.
Yeah.
If Jericho goes back to WWE, Jericho's opinion is he's the list guy and he's the second match on WrestleMania. And to him, that's not good enough.
Right. And it's a chip in his shoulder sort of deal. And look what he's done with AEW.
And so he goes to New Japan and he wrestles Kenny Omega.
Yep.
He wrestles Okada. He has a run with the Intercontinental title. And in AEW, main event against Kenny Omega, main event against Adam Page for the to become the first All Elite Wrestling World Champion.
Exactly.
Main event with Cody Rhodes. Although that was the semi-main event because they put Moxley and Omega on last because it was unsanctioned.
Right. And that's coming up on 2 years now.
Main event against Jon Moxley where he loses his title.
Yep.
Stadium Stampede main event. Orange Cassidy, important matchup because he's helping a younger guy get over.
Yep.
MJF, a new matchup, helping a younger guy get over.
Yep. Huge.
Feature matchup, teaming with MJF against the Young Bucks. Important matchup because it's a dream scenario. The Bucks and Jericho in the same ring.
Exactly.
So Jericho is doing new and important stuff, and he's got input into it. And I think that's a big, that's an important factor for Chris Jericho, especially at this stage of his career.
Got a lot of say there. Yeah. And it was a lot of cool stuff to look back on there and some question marks, but I definitely hope some people check that interview out. And it may not give you everything you want, but it's good to really see those two have that good chemistry together and the respect for each other for that matter too.
Yep. I'm wedging this thing in here before we get to my final note. This was sparked by a friend of the podcast, Carl Hayes.
Yeah, Carl.
Had a Twitter interaction with him today. And you realize, Mike, that as we, you know, they're doing WrestleMania Backlash or Payback or whatever it's called the next
Backlash,
one.
Yeah.
But Money in the Bank is soon, right? Money in the Bank will be in May, I think.
No, it's going to be June.
June, okay.
Yeah, so it's going to go WrestleMania Backlash and then Money in the Bank in June.
Okay.
So flipping it.
Seven of the eight women, as we talk today on April 18th, seven of the eight women that could be in the Money in the Bank match. Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, Ronda Rousey, Alexa Bliss, Sasha Banks, Bayley, Asuka. That today could be your Money in the Bank, seven of the eight women in Money in the Bank.
What a dream match. Wow. That is an...
Any one of them can win. Any one of them can cash in the same night.
That is a dream match. And if that happens, you get all those on one, one ring there in the same night. That would be awesome. Like, imagine Becky Lynch returning at a Money in the Bank and Ronda Rousey for that matter. Charlotte, too, after being squeezed out of WrestleMania. Huge.
Charlotte's return match is tomorrow night against Asuka.
Asuka, right.
And Charlotte had the bratty I'm the Queen promo.
She's back.
She's got the aggressiveness, so
she's the heel. Yep, that's what she needs
because she's got it. She got that thing.
That would be a great Money in the Bank. You got me thinking there. Wow. Oh yep. My gosh. Fantastic.
Final thing on my notes is our buddy Justin Barrasso of Sports Illustrated said in his column this week, quote, following the success of last weekend's WrestleMania, which was held in front of a live crowd at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, WWE returned to its Thunderdome on Monday, performing in front of a virtual crowd. Sources within WWE confirmed to Sports Illustrated that the plan is to hold SummerSlam in front of a live crowd. Mike Riley, you told me you got something on this.
I was told that Boston is in the running. Boston could be a potential suitor. However, the problem is, though, right now, the state of Massachusetts, as you know, is at 10% capacity for indoor and outdoor venues or whatever. So if they're going to have this at the Garden, the TD Garden, as of today, the most amount of people you can have is, 4,000 people, right? Yeah, is that worth it?
No.
So, yeah, I don't think it's worth it. But Boston, apparently, because of last year when it was supposed to be here in 2020, robbed out of it, they are a potential suitor. I got to think it's going to be somewhere outdoors, though. Don't you think so?
So I don't believe that Boston is in play for SummerSlam this year because of seating capacities and so on. Now, if we're talking about Gillette Stadium in Foxborough,
different story.
Jonathan Kraft is on like the Mass General. He's got a high prominent position on the Mass General. Jonathan Kraft is the owner, is one of the owners of the Patriots. So Gillette Stadium, maybe. Maybe.
Don't rule it out.
But I'm looking more at another location in Florida or Texas, open air venues that
maybe a
have less restrictions on fans being a host state for SummerSlam.
Yep.
I was talking to somebody who was in Tampa working WrestleMania, and she told me that fans did better with protocols than concerts of the Super Bowl. And
that's good.
The conversations that she was part of were more focused on what WWE is going to do with fans in Dallas for next year's WrestleMania.
That's good. That's a good sign. Good step in the right direction. And no specific date yet, though, for Dallas next year. No date.
They had originally released a date, Mike.
Yeah.
And then the last time they promoted it, they took it off.
That's interesting.
So what I think is happening is they're trying to figure out if they want to do two nights of Mania or not.
Which I'm all for now.
Here's the problem, Mike.
Yeah.
You do two nights this year because you're trying to get 25,000 and 25,000 worth of fans, which totals 50,000, which makes it worth it to run the venue, right?
Yep.
In Dallas, you're trying to get 100,000 for the night. You're not getting 100,000 for two nights. Probably, unless you're trying to do 50 and 50.
Probably not, but it also paces it out better if you want to have that same amount of matches. I think from a fan's perspective, with the same amount of matches that they had, 14 over two nights there, shorter was great. But if you're going to go one night there, then you've got to cut it back to 6 to 7 matches because that fatigue is huge. You and I know about that. Yep. We've been there. You've got to cut it down. It has to happen. So it's one or the other. But it's going to be interesting, though. I mean, we'll see how the world is in less than a year now at this point. And obviously, Jerry Jones has been very open about having full capacity for the Dallas Cowboys in 2021. Oh, yeah. So
I watched the Texas Rangers. I watched a no-hitter. The Padres threw a no-hitter against the Rangers.
Full capacity.
Full ballpark.
Yeah.
No masks.
Nothing. Yep. So deep in the heart of Texas, they do everything bigger there.
Mike, anything else from your notes?
No, thank you all. Good week. Thanks for listening, everybody.
So I know Mike said this at the end of his podcast on Monday. I need to thank everybody involved in allowing us to do a show live immediately after WrestleMania. I haven't done hosting a live radio show since I was in college. And I didn't know that I was the lead voice on the show until the open played. And it's tossed to me. So for me, who's just a button pushing hack, who does a pre-recorded podcast that he can go into post-production and edit, it was pretty cool.
Did a nice job leading it.
And I hope that the fun that I was having conveyed out to everybody who listened. If you didn't listen live, you listened on the podcast. And thank you to everybody who called in. Thank you to Joe and Mike for participating. Because that was a dream come true for me, is to host a live wrestling radio show and get to talk to the people of Boston or the people of whatever town I was in or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and news with the Bruins.
And got to hit the breaking news sounder. So here's a little inside radio thing. Tim McCone was doing headlines for the Bruins that night. Mm-hmm. Tim McCone's a wrestling guy.
Yep.
And I said to him, I said, I'd love to be able to hit the breaking news sounder and say that Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be returning to the Patriots via trade. Ah. I didn't get Jimmy Garoppolo, but I got Taylor Hall to the Boston Bruins.
And the Bruins are, what, 4-0 since the trade, right?
And who would have thought that, the Bruins won the Taylor Hall trade.
Yeah.
But who would have thought that the Bruins would be making a trade at midnight after WrestleMania? Way to steal the headlines.
So that
breaking news thing was a little bit of a cluster bleep.
Yeah, yeah,
because I didn't know where to go with it.
No, that was awesome. That was awesome.
I actually almost said, "Holy shit, the Bruins got Taylor Hall on the air," but I caught myself.
You held back. And
this is the difference in a podcast: is that you'll hear that bleeped out,
right?
Because
I post-produced
it
exactly.
But I just want to thank everybody for Jim Louth, Rick Radzik. Mm-hmm. They're the assistant program director and the program director. Mm-hmm. They've had, and this doesn't. This podcast started with Mike Thomas being like, Jimmy Stewart, you need to do a wrestling podcast.
Yep.
So there's a lot of people to thank for that. But I'm appreciative of every one of them, and the people who called in, and maybe we'll get to do it again. I don't know.
Likewise.
But, I've got a you know, that thing that they call a bucket list.
Yeah.
I checked another one off it.
Pretty cool. So, pretty cool stuff.
So, thank you everybody who listens on the podcast and has supported the podcast, whether it's just downloading it and just deleting it, or whether it's just downloading it and actually listening to it for a few minutes, or it's buying a t-shirt, or it's sending a tweet or an angry email or anything like that. It's appreciated.
A lot of people, yeah. And a lot of people buying the shirts. Sorry to mean to interrupt you there, but a lot of people buying those shirts, Jimmy. It's
some good stuff. We did a lot of content leading into WrestleMania. And we did a lot of content, you know, post WrestleMania. We did two shows. So, thank you to everybody who listened. We've got more to come. And hopefully that support will keep going. So, that's my little 2 minutes of grab ass thank yous.
God bless.
Yeah. We need God's blessing more than anybody knows, especially me. Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike and I will talk to you soon.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.